Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this edition of On the Double with the Double S Express. I'm Sean Boyd alongside Sean Wally. Man, show number 53, our first show after the 1 year, my friend. Sean Wally, how you doing today?
What's going on this sunny, sunny Monday? Show 53 here of On the Double. Thought we'd throw you a curveball, those of you that are listeners every single week and also on demand, starting it out with Sean Boyd at the top. A lot going on, as usual, in the sports world.
Man, and the very topic of discussion for us, man, it has to be the NBA finals for our conference finals for both the East and the West. And, of course, the San Antonio Spurs taking on, oh, man, the beloved Oklahoma City Thunder, Sean Wally. And, of course, I say that tongue-in-cheek, because, man, some of the people in the Pacific Northwest are still harboring some harsh feelings. But right now, the sun is shining for the San Antonio Spurs, up 10-65-55 over the Oklahoma City Thunder.
You know, you talk about some people in the Pacific Northwest. How about an entire television station, Cairo TV in Seattle, was not naming the Oklahoma City Thunder, and they were listing them and speaking to them as the former Sonics.
Man, isn't that something, man? I mean, you talk about solidarity, and, you know, that's a good thing, especially everything that, you know, the city of Seattle is going through, even now. And, of course, you know, Cairo's showing its, you know, its firm grip on, you know, being loyal to the Seattle Supersonics. And you're right, man. Of course, every time they show highlights of the Oklahoma City Thunder, they don't call them that, as you were saying. They call them the team formerly known as Seattle Supersonics. And, you know, man, Sean, it looks like every time Seattle takes a step forward and moving into the right direction, and you know, as far as getting a team, man, what's been going on up there lately as far as the murmurs? It sounds like there's some things going on in the, you know, between the NHL and the NBA that are kind of rubbing the Pacific Northwest the wrong way.
Well, I think it's mainly the politicians, as usual, the Seattle City Council, the mayor's office. You know, there's a new mayor from last year and the year before, when the entire mayor, the city council, everybody was behind the arena plan and the MOU that Chris Hansen and Steve Ballmer and their group got into agreement with the city on. But now there's a new guy steering the ship, and he's been fairly non-committal. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. And right now, the NBA is the further out in sight, when you've got the NHL in town last week having meetings with head honchos in Seattle, the commissioner, the deputy commissioner, and potential ownership groups were in town secretly, and they wanted to see how to get this arena going, get the NHL in town first, and that would benefit whichever league, the NBA or the NHL, decides to come to town first.
Yeah, you know, so correct me if I'm wrong. You said this. Is it an MOU? Is that what it is? What is this agreement? Because it sounds like what the agreement is that, you know, the NBA comes first as far as the city of Seattle's agreement with Chris Hansen and the Ballmer Group. And so here comes the NHL, and they want to, you know, build an arena. They want to, you know, actually take a stab at having an NHL team in Seattle, and it sounds like the mayor nixed it. And so what is this MOU deal maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong, this acronym, but what does this consist of?
Well, as far as I know, it's a memorandum of understanding, basically an agreement between the city, the county, and Chris Hansen's group. And what it states is they have a five-year window to get this arena running, get it built. And within that window, Hansen and Ballmer have to secure an NBA franchise one way or another, via trade, barter, expansion, however they can do it. They will not move forward with funding their portion of the arena until an NBA team is secured. So if an NHL team is ready to come here, or they do come to the Pacific Northwest, they're going to have to play in Key Arena. Tacoma could be a possibility, but I haven't heard that. So, but the NHL is, like I said, they're behind the eight ball, ready to get this rolling. But yet Seattle's saying we can't make changes to the MOU. And I believe the reasoning is it would have to go back through, be rewritten, an amendment be done, the city council get involved, vote on it, just like they went through a couple years ago in getting the original MOU done.
Wow. You know, you would think that, you know, all that's gone on up there in Seattle, that, you know, if there was a, you know, a league that would come up and say, hey, this is the place that we want to establish, first and foremost, you just do it. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Just go ahead and do it. And this is one of the things that I was talking about before, Sean, is that, you know, Seattle should just go ahead and build the arena, whatever it is, whether it's an arena for NHL or for the NBA. Get the arena built first so that you have that brick and mortar established. But it sounds like the city of Seattle has even more problems when it comes to the Ballmer group, Sean Wally.
Well, Steve Ballmer is no longer with Microsoft. He was basically pushed out the back door and said, thanks for your service. And they moved in a different direction. And that rubbed Ballmer the wrong way. And now he's no longer working. He's retired. He's got his millions, billions gaining interest for himself that he can relocate if he needs to. He can make a run at the Clippers if they're for sale. And he said he wouldn't look at moving them to Seattle because he would lose money. They would be worth less in Seattle than they are in Los Angeles.
So there are some harbored feelings with the Ballmer group and sounds like the city of Seattle. But I mean, is this something that can be fixed? Is this something that could, you know, to, you know, in the near future that things could be worked out?
Well, when a team becomes available, yes. It's just a matter of, will it be a team that can relocate to Seattle or will there be expansion? If right. Ballmer does decide to make a run at the Clippers, he's probably not going to look at moving them, and I don't know if the league would even allow that.
So what does Seattle do then? What do they do right now? I mean, they're in a catch-22 right now. They have a city council that doesn't understand or doesn't realize the big time effects of having a professional, a third or a fourth professional sport up there. You have an ownership group that's kind of in a flux right now. What does Seattle do as far as, you know, getting that bid or getting that word out that this is a town that can handle another professional sports team?
Well, the bottom line, as it always is money. And Hansen and Ballmer have said they're not putting that money up until they have their piece of the pie, which is the NBA team. So now it becomes who's going to help and pitch in to get the other portion of the money that Hansen and Ballmer were going to put in, say, if the NHL arrives first. Will the potential owners of this new NHL team pony up that money, which I believe was $200 million, and the city and county were matching? So there's a money shortage without Hansen and Ballmer's amounts. So where does that come from? Who does it come from?
Well, let's hope the city of Seattle gets this one right. You know, they spent so much time, so much energy, so much effort and trying to get the Sacramento Kings up to Seattle. At one point, it looked like that was going to be the case. And now it looks like Seattle is trying to find its legs as far as getting another professional team up there in the Pacific Northwest. We were talking a little bit about the Clippers and with the Ballmer group. The NBA, Adam Silver setting a date for Donald Sterling and the NBA Board of Governors to come together, the owners to come together. June 3rd is the hearing to vote on Donald Sterling. Man, what do you think that's going to be? Is that going to be a unanimous vote, or is that going to be something that is going to cause questions moving forward?
You know, I say anybody who votes against it should be ready for the PR nightmare.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. I mean, it's been a nightmare all around. I mean, you have people that are, you know, that have had enough. Of course, Magic Johnson came out and, you know, he was very candid in his feelings on, you know, how this came about. And he doesn't even realize or he realized, but he doesn't understand why his name is brought into the fold. And so, yeah, the NBA has to act fast on this. The NBA players are wondering what's going on and what's taking so long. And so I think Adam Silver, the reason why he set this date on June 3rd is that he wants to do just that. He wants to get this, you know, out in the open, make sure that they're being swift in their actions, but they don't want to make this a big media spectacle.
Yeah, and the longer it takes and drags on, it just continues to sit there and fester. And as you mentioned, everybody's wondering why. Everybody wonders what's going on. Why is he still there? Granted, it very well could be a long, drawn-out legal issue, or it may not be. There may be enough bylines with the NBA Board of Governors and in their rules and regulations that if they vote him out, he's done.
Well, let's hope the NBA moves fast on that. Moving on to horse racing, man, I want to talk a little bit about this. Of course, there is a thoroughbred out there in California, Chrome Sean Wally, winning the Preakness, number two of the famous, prestigious Triple Crown. And there's a big to-do about a nasal strip, Sean Wally, on California Chrome.
Yeah, it's amazing that that horse was able to win two-thirds of the Triple Crown with one race to go. And yeah, it's almost like, what, a breathe right for horses?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, they're you know, it almost seemed like they were saying that it was to California Chrome's advantage. Of course, this, you know, this horse had some nasally problems, had a cough, I guess, a couple of days ago. The track was wet. It was pouring down rain over there in Maryland. And then all of a sudden, you know, the skies part. He comes out with a nasal strip and he gets number two, which I think hands down, you know, this should be his for the taking for the Triple Crown.
Well, it's going to be very historic, and I'm sure it's going to be one of the more viewed races in history with the Triple Crown there in the balance.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And so, you know, it's an exciting time. This goes back to, you know, I mean, how many times has, you know, has a horse won the Triple Crown? I mean, this is, you know, one of these, you know, once in a while deals, you know, and to have a horse that's dominant, you know, it makes it not good for the, you know, for betting in, you know, for betting in Vegas, of course, but, you know, seeing a Triple Crown, that's dominance, man. And people like to see that once in a while.
You know, this time of year in the horse races, especially seeing the Kentucky Derby a few weeks ago, takes me back to 2011 when I was blessed enough to be able to work that for NBC Sports. And it's just a fabulous spectacle and amazing how many people are there and the whole dress up, the big hats, the fancy outfits. And just if you ever get a chance and you haven't been, try to put that on your bucket list for sure.
Yeah, talk about that. I mean, talk about the ambiance, because, you know, we're always talking about the, you know, the major sports, and the, you know, that we work with the major networks. And of course, you had the chance to be in Kentucky. I mean, what was that atmosphere like? You're talking about the hats. You're talking about the, you know, the characteristics of some of the people there. But what was it like? What was the nostalgia all around?
Well, it's basically a giant party. I mean, everywhere you go, there's a sea of people. And, you know, you've got 160, 170,000 people in one venue. It's just amazing. And we'll have more time to get to this later. And right now, let's head on out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Gerard Rabb, former wide receiver at Boise State and as well the Boise Burn in the AF2. Gerard, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, Gerard, thanks for being on, man. And of course, as Sean Wally was just saying, you know, wide receiver for the Boise Burn, the Indoor Football League, I mean, it is not, or the American Football Indoor Football League is not, you know, your everyday league. So, I mean, kind of give us an idea on what that's like. I mean, it's a fast track. You've got the walls, you know, all around in the Arena Football League. They have two. And, you know, I mean, what's that like preparing for games?
It's a little different, you know, going from a 100-yard field to a 53 wide to a 50-yard field and 25 yards wide is a pretty big difference. And you got the great equalizer, which is the wall. It's pretty fast-paced.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm sure you have to make some adjustments there. You know, you coming from, you know, the big college scene, playing at Boise State, and of course you were a part of a huge, huge taste of history. You know, playing against the Oklahoma Sooners in 2007 with the old hook and lateral play. Man, so I'm, I, you know, something tells me you do not get enough of talking about that, man.
Well, I got to say, every time I talk about it, it brings a smile to my face. So, yeah, you're right.
And so
that was a great time in my career. It was fun playing at Boise State because you get to be a part of things, big deals like that. And before I went there, you know, they were kind of up and Boise State was still up and coming. And, you know, to be a part of something so big that kind of put Boise State on the map, that being a part of that game was, let's just say it's pretty epic.
Yeah, and Boise State, you know, was still on the rise as far as a perennial with Chris Peterson. And, of course, you guys are making that drive. Kind of give us an idea on what was going on in your head when, you know, when Coach calls the play and he says, man, we're going to go with the, you know, with the hook and ladder. And this is, you know, to win the football game. What was going on in the huddle and what was going on in your mind when that play was called?
Well, yeah, you know, there's a lot of factors that came into the call. So, now that you look back on it and, you know, you think about the play, it's kind of, I mean, who runs that play anymore? You know, it's kind of a, it's kind of a lost art to put something like that together. But at the same time, you know, given the circumstances, quarterback is just throwing a pick and, you know, we went down and we had, I think it was 47 seconds on the clock and it's 4th and 20. I mean, what do you draw up for that?
Yeah.
There's really no other plays.
Yeah. I mean, you have to think, right. I mean, you're digging really deep in this one. I mean, it's 4th and long. And, you know, let's face it, offensive coordinators have plays developed for, you know, anywhere between 5 and 11 yards. You know, maybe it can go up to 15, but we're talking about 20 yards here. So you're digging real deep in the offensive coordinator's playbook to try to find something to make something work, man. And you guys did. Right. Excellent play.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. That was another one of those experiences where you can't really put words on, you know.
Gerard Rabb joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Gerard, last question on the great play against the Sooners. When you took the small pitch from your fellow wide receiver and you had a clearing to the end zone, I mean, did your eyes get big? What was going through your head? I mean, you had to know that the score was there and you guys were going to take the game.
You know, I kind of took it a stride at the time. You know, you catch the – it's 4th and 20. My buddy Dryden James, who caught the initial pass, once he pitched it, you know, the old-fashioned time slowing down and you can hear, like, your heartbeat, can't hear the crowd, that kind of snapped in, you know, adrenaline took over. And like you said, I caught the pitch, and I looked up, and I saw green grass, and – There it goes. I snapped back into reality and I took off, you know. And, you know, looking back, I kind of watched the film. And as I get closer to the end zone, probably about the 15 or the 20, I kind of looked back. I kept looking back like every 3 strides just to make sure nobody close enough to hit the ball out. And that's when I dove.
Just an amazing play with a storybook ending. And in your Boise State career, you had 9 touchdowns. Do you remember each and every one of them?
You know, it's funny. I don't. And not because they weren't special, just because as a receiver, you kind of have a short-term memory. You're moving on to the next.
Gerard Rabb, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Sean, while he's talking a little bit about the, you know, the touchdowns that you had at and, you know, of course, the junior year, you had the big play against Oklahoma. The next year, you know, kind of the same numbers. You know, kind of walk us through a little bit on, you know, what you were going through going into that season. Of course, you're probably looking at having just, you know, huge numbers. Was there a particular reason, you know, why the numbers stayed the same?
Pretty much because of our scheme at Boise State. We had a if you look at the wide receiver repertoire we had some pretty solid individuals. We had Legadu Nane, who ended up playing for the Chargers for a few years, and they went to Miami. give me a second. And then we also had Jonathan James, who played for or got picked up by Chicago and then played in the Canadian League. We had Vinny Peretta, who went on and had a good career. Who was Jeremy Childs. We had, we had a pretty deep receiving core. So, you know, to get more catches was tough because we spread the ball around quite a bit.
Now, tell us a little bit about, you know, the program there. Of course, Chris Peterson being the head coach, and now he's at the University of Washington in his first year. What kind of coach was Chris Peterson?
He's a player's coach. He knows how to motivate. He's got a very clear direction, and he makes sure that his team is bought into the team goals and even personal goals. So, very good motivator, very good coach, and he's, as you can see, he's had a successful career.
And so, of course, Chris, you know, in that area, you know, being in Boise, you can, you know, the, of course, that's a college town, and everybody, you know, riles up and gets excited about the Broncos. Do you think that Chris Peterson will have that same success up in Seattle?
I do. He's the type of coach that when they come around, you can tell. Like, he's got a philosophy that's special. He buys into his program. He buys into his kids, and he creates a chemistry with the vision. And he's very adamant about keeping the vision and keeping focused on the task at hand. So, I don't see anything but good things coming from Coach Peterson.
That's the voice of former Boise State wide receiver Gerard Rabb. And Gerard, whether it be coaches or maybe an older player, who were some people that took you under their wing and helped guide you throughout your high school and collegiate career?
You know, it actually started really young. I was 10 years old playing junior All-American football, and I was initially a quarterback, and I wanted to be just like Grando Cunningham. When he got the haircut like him, that wore number 12, it was, you know, I was kind of a fanatic. But he kind of helped me watching him, and then my coaches seeing me and recognizing my talent and kind of taking me, you know, under their wing and guiding me up through my pre-high school years. And it wasn't until the last year before I got to high school, I moved to wideout because we actually found a quarterback that can get the ball to me. And so that's kind of how I got switched over to wideout. In high school, those same individuals were around to support and mentor me through my high school years. Guys like Keith Morris, which you never really hear about, and Ron Young and Ron Brown. I mean, these guys, Michael Petrie, these guys were, you know, the local heroes for me, at least. And they kind of helped shape and mold my career.
That's great, getting that support. And it's always awesome to have people to help you along the way.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Gerard, in the NFL, a few of the teams this past weekend had their rookie minicamp, and that will continue the next few weeks. You got to go through that with the Dallas Cowboys and I believe the San Francisco 49ers. What was that like for you, and what do you think those players went through this past weekend?
Well, there's a lot of probably a lot of nerves, you know, going into your first minicamp. A lot of nerves and patience is something that they're going to have to learn. You know, as a rookie, you don't get the reps you wish you had. And, you know, especially coming from, most of these kids are coming from a starting position, already getting the ball, getting tons of looks in practice and games. And now they're going to go to not having quite as many reps in practice and maybe more reps on special teams. So I think the little balance between frustration and learning some patience is what the first mini camp was, at least for me.
Now, Gerard, you know, one of the things that Sean and I talked about, you know, on our show a couple of weeks ago is we talked about the NFL draft and, you know, kind of give us a look on, you know, of course, you being a senior at Boise State, looking at going into the NFL, you know,
right.
Kind of give us an idea on what that's like as far as, you know, the preparation. I mean, you're hiring an agent, you know, what's your posture like? You know, what is that whole process about, you know, as far as moving forward into the NFL?
That's a tough one. You know, you're a young kid, you know, probably 21, 22 years old, maybe 23. Haven't really experienced a whole lot outside of football and school. So, you know, that type of stage is pretty big. You know, it's a tough process. You're hiring an agent that you have to trust to make the best decisions for you and be in your corner. At the same time, you got to train and there's a lot going on in such a little time. So it's a different experience, but I think with the right guidance, like the people that were mentoring me coming up, I think it makes it a lot easier.
And of course, Gerard, you take that and you give back, you know, to the community these days. And of course, you know, giving your expertise and what it's like to play in the big games and playing in the NFL and of course the AF2, you have an organization or a program called Gridiron Dreams Football Camp.
Yep.
And so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that's my passion. So coming up, kind of like I was explaining before, I had a few mentors in my life at a young age, and those were my heroes, at least in my town. So, you know, for me, I felt like once I got to the point where I got to and I dropped or I stopped playing ball, I felt like that was my way to give back to the sport, is by giving these kids that don't quite have, you know, the money to get in these camps and to see these people that play the sport are the best in their field, and get those two together. Guys like me that have been there, played at the highest level, along with the kids that are in high school that maybe need a little guidance or need a little inspiration or need a little bit of motivation to train harder. That was my vision. That's how I came up with Gridiron Dreams, for the kids that may not afford it, to get them the best support group I can find. And that's what Gridiron Dreams. Check it out, gridirondreams.net. It's got good stuff going on there. It's actually coming up here in 2.5 weeks on June 6th in Boise, so I'm pretty pumped about it.
And Gerard, that's great work that you're doing, giving back to the kids, helping teach them and show them the right way to do things on and off the football field. And appreciate you giving your time to that. And gridirondreams.net. And it's also a chance for you to get back to Boise, because I know you're now in Western Washington.
Yeah, exactly. I'm over here in Western Washington now, but I still got to give love to my Boise folks.
All right, Gerard Rabb, former receiver at Boise State, as well as for the Boise Burn in the AF2. Thanks so much for your time and your insight. Best of luck to you, and we hope to talk to you down the road.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Good luck to you, Gerard. All right. Thanks for being on, man.
Okay.
There goes Gerard Rabb. Now in Everett, Washington, did good things in Boise and is still doing good things with gridirondreams.net.
Yeah, man. You know, a lot of the players that have played at the next level, you know, one of the best things that they could possibly do, Sean, is to, you know, teach others, you know, their process and how to get to the next level. And Gerard's doing just that, you know, with Gridiron Dreams. And so, you know, it's a tough time these days. And, you know, our young people in the community need the best leg up that they can possibly get. So kudos to Gerard. So we're going to take a quick break. Guest number one in the books on show 53, Gerard Rabb with us. You keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. Cause you burn with the first flame. Yeah.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. We just had big time guest number one tonight, Gerard Rabb. Former wide receiver at Boise State in 2005 and 2006. And of course, he was on the scoring end of the famous hook and lateral against Oklahoma.
Yeah, you know, I think that was Sam Bradford that was on the field at the time or playing in that game, Sean Wally. And, you know, I remember, you know, Boise State trying to get that prominence, trying to get that respect in the NCAA. And it just seemed like it, no matter what they did, they had to go undefeated like 2-3 seasons before they can actually get that respect. And here they are playing against the Oklahoma Sooners and, you know, and Sam Bradford. And man, they pulled out a huge, huge victory with that play.
Yeah. And that was really, as Gerard was saying, they were up and coming. They weren't quite to the level Boise State got to a few years later. But they were the beginning, and that's got to feel good for them.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, you know, Gerard, how that felt to actually be a part of a foundation that, you know, of creating just, you know, a prominent program, a prominent organization in Boise State, and, you know, trying to get that respect, because it's not easy. It's not easy, you know, having success, you know, in your first couple of years and not getting that respect. And so should have asked him what that was, you know, what that was like.
Just another reason to have him back on as we get closer to the college and NFL football season.
Yeah, you know, and of course, you know, having ties with the Pacific Northwest and Northern California, you know, with the San Francisco 49ers, you know, their camp opening up or rookie camp opening up all around, you know, just to, you know, touch base with them a little bit about that as well. And you know, missed an opportunity to talk about Levi Stadium once again.
Well, since you mentioned the Buttonfly Stadium, the Pac-12 has reached an agreement to host the Pac-12 Championship in football at that stadium. So it'll be nice. It should be a neutral site unless, of course, you get the Stanfords or the Californias in there. Then I'm sure they will pack that place like crazy.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that was an excellent move by the Pac-12 to do that. And you know, a great venue, and why not take advantage of one of the newer sports venues in the world? And of course, you know, Levi, aka Buttonfly Stadium, you know, it's going to be home to the Super Bowl here in a couple of years as well. So a lot of action in that Santa Clara area, and you know, it'll be center stage for all to see here this season.
So do you want to stamp it now, that Super Bowl down there at Levi Stadium, Seahawks versus Raiders? Give your team a year or so to get it right?
Man, you know, I would love to say that, you know, Oakland would be the team. Wouldn't that be great, though? Yeah, I mean, with San Francisco doing well over the past few years and of course, Seattle, you know, etching its mark in NFL folklore with the Super Bowl win, wouldn't that be awesome? With the Super Bowl at Buttonfly Stadium, and it's the Seattle Seahawks versus the Oakland Raiders. But the huge irony of it all, you know, for the Raiders to play in the backyard in the Bay and, you know, play a Super Bowl, I think that'd be fantastic.
We'd both be laughing until, of course, one of our teams lost.
Well, I mean, you know, any mark of victory right now for the East Bay and the Oakland Raiders would be, you know, just sweet victory. So, you know, I look forward to that happening here soon. I think the Raiders are on their way, having a great draft. And, you know, of course, rookie camp opening up. And, you know, there are also signs right now of the rookies actually making their mark, you know, on the team. And so, you know, it just means for a solid foundation. And I just hope they can put it together.
Well, your Raiders picked up a nice receiver today.
Oh, man. You know, Greg Little, coming from the Cleveland Browns, you know, he was a second-round pick a few years ago for the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, they had to release him, of course, you know, making way for their new receiver corps coming in. But what a great pick by Reggie McKenzie to pick up, you know, not just a receiver, but a receiver that has – you know, some stability, that had great success with Cleveland and is still looking to make his mark in this NFL, and giving him a chance to come out with a young wide receiver core in Oakland, along with some stability, you know, as well with a couple of veteran receivers that they picked up. Greg Little, man, I think that was an awesome pickup today.
You know, I think what's more baffling to me is, what is Cleveland doing getting rid of him, especially when you don't have a clue if awesome, amazing Josh Gordon is going to be available for you?
Yeah, so, you know, the rumors are is that Josh Gordon is in camp. He is, you know, working out with the team. Of course, he's waiting to see his fate. But yeah, you're right, Sean. I mean, you would think that you would want to, you know, solidify the receiver core as much as possible. Of course, Cleveland Browns, you know, bringing in Miles Austin, you know, as one of those receivers. And, you know, I mean, who knows? You know, maybe, you know, that's a step in the right direction. I don't know if Cleveland's thinking, you know, I don't know what they're thinking as far as, you know, allowing, you know, a good receiver like Greg Little to go.
Sean, did you hear what they did over the weekend? They're in Cleveland with their mini camp, not allowing any outside of Cleveland media in, and they only opened their window for media time to 15 minutes for interviews for only local Cleveland media.
Yeah, so what do you think is going on there? They're trying to make sure that the media doesn't get a hold of one Johnny Manziel. And so you have to kind of wonder what that's doing to Johnny's psyche. You know, I mean, he's Johnny Football. And, you know, he's comfortable and he's best when he's in the limelight. And so when your ownership is trying to, you know, to thwart that a little bit, I mean, what do you think that's going to do to Johnny Football?
Well, all reports are is that he was very humble and very calm and didn't seem to mind that there was not all the media attention and as they're calling it, Manziel mania around him and the team. So it was probably a wise choice by the Browns, and as their coach put it, why do we care what people outside of our facility think about us?
Oh, man, I just see Johnny Football as a caged animal ready to come out. And, of course, you know, Cleveland has been starving for the superstar ever since LeBron James left, and, you know, they're looking for, you know, that public figure to, you know, witness once again. And Johnny Manziel is not disappointing. I mean, his jersey sales are through the roof as far as the NFL is concerned. And, you know, that's good. That's good for the city of Cleveland to have that type of camaraderie. You know, I mean, the list goes on and on as far as, you know, their city being snake bitten time and time again in all major sports. And so, you know, I wish Johnny Football well. I think that he can do a solid job. And it just remains to be seen on if he's going to play this year or if they're actually going to keep him under wraps for a full NFL season.
You know, we touched on it in previous weeks, how it's just so amazing the stranglehold the NFL has on the football fan, on the sports fan. And it's not football season. We won't even get to games that count until the beginning of September. Yet, you turn on various sports radio, you listen to this show. What are we doing? We're talking football. We're not talking baseball. We're talking a little bit of horse racing, maybe mixing in a little bit of playoffs in the NBA. Hockey's in the playoffs. Do you hear much talk about that? Not really.
Yeah, you know, and hockey has really struggled, especially a couple of years ago with the collective bargaining agreement coming together. And you would have thought that, you know, a lot of the fans would have, you know, started to come back around in the NHL. But, you know, NHL is tough. It's a select group that actually love that sport. But you're right, Sean Wally. I mean, you know, you're talking about the NFL. And, you know, it even brought question marks with Mark Cuban as far as kind of taking a couple of jabs at the NFL, you know, as if to say, dude, how far can you go? You guys are coming up to a ceiling. There has to be a ceiling level. And, you know, a lot of these other leagues, such as the NBA, are going to catch up. And, you know, I thought that was kind of tongue-in-cheek by Mark Cuban. I happen to think that the NFL will just keep pressing on. I mean, they're right now expanding to London and having a couple of teams go over there and play there and reaching out. And of course they have, you know, these, you know, world leagues, their developmental leagues around the world for these NFL teams. And so, I mean, it's just going to keep getting better.
Yeah. And that's, you know, everybody wants the attention. Everybody wants the advertising dollar. Everybody wants people to buy the tickets. And that's what everything comes down to, is the dollar bill. And it's somewhat unfortunate, but that is what makes the world go round. And I mean, the NBA is large all around the world. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the NBA shakes out with the conference finals taking place this week, getting underway, and the finals around the corner. We'll see if LeBron James, Ray Allen, and the crew down in Miami, Dwayne Wade, if they can repeat again or not.
Yeah, so game one going to, as you mentioned, the NBA, game one going to the Indiana Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. This is this was circled on the calendar, you know, a long time ago at the beginning of the season, if you will, when the Indiana Pacers were beating their chest as being the next great thing. And so, as we all know, since then, they have been very short of that, been shaky going into the end of the season. Of course, their first two rounds in the NBA playoffs has been lackluster, but here's their chance to actually shine against the Miami Heat. And of course, they taking game one. You know, I happen to think, Sean Wally, that the Miami Heat are going to come out here and take care of business in the series, but you know, we'll see.
In fact, we definitely will see, and we will be shifting gears right after this. Keep it locked, as you will not want to miss big-time guest number two, and that is Houston Lillard, quarterback of the Tri-Cities Fever, right on the other side of the break. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Likes the inconvenience of car repairs. Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product. Helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy. Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the
world's gonna know your name. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And we're going right back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcoming big time guest number two tonight. And that is Houston Lillard, the quarterback of the Tri-Cities Fever in the Indoor Football League. Houston, thanks for your time tonight.
Man, how you doing? I'm glad to be on the show. It's my first time.
Hey, Houston, thanks for being on the Double, man. And of course, with the Tri-Cities Fever in Tri-Cities, Washington. How's the season going this year?
It's going good now. I came in the middle of the season. I started off in Portland with the Portland Thunder of the AFL, and things didn't work out, and I ended up signing with the Tri-Cities Fever going into week five, I believe. We lost my first two games here, and then we start getting things rolling. So it's picking up. We win this weekend, we'll be at 500. Still got a chance to make the playoffs, so we're just working it out right now.
And now, Houston, I believe that this is your second stint with the Tri-Cities Fever. You said you'd mentioned the Portland Thunder. And, of course, playing with the Portland Thunder, man, there's a sibling that actually plays a professional sport up there in Portland. Your brother, Damian Lillard, man. I mean, tell us a little bit about that. You know,
it's just a sibling rivalry
growing up.
Oh, man, growing up, you know, we always went back and forth, you know, with basketball and football. But honestly, I was way better than him growing up, you know, obviously because he was smaller. But once he got older, he started getting tall and started becoming a problem. I always knew he was going to be good. But I can honestly say I didn't know he was going to be this good. I'm happy. It's a blessing being in Portland, you know, him being in the NBA, having the success he's having, definitely. Making things better for our family and for our, you know, the future of our kids and stuff like that. So I'm just happy for him and hope he keeps doing well.
I mean, you know, parents have to be very proud. Your family has to be very proud, of course. You know, two awesome athletes such as your brother Damian and yourself, you know, doing some cool things. Of course, you guys coming from the Bay, man, and I'm out here in Northern California. Hey, you're repping well, man. And I got to say, kudos to you. Man, I mean, keep up the great work.
Appreciate it. We're going to try, man. Just try to keep motivating each other. You know, obviously, he's on a higher level, but him being on that level and the success he's having is motivating me even more to get back on the field after taking last season off.
And you answered my question because, man, I was just getting ready to ask you, what does that do for you as far as motivation? I mean, you're playing, you know, arena football, and it's tough, man. We just had Gerard Rabb on. And he was formerly of the Boise, Boise Arena football team. And so, you know, kind of give us, an idea on what that's like as far as preparing week in and week out.
It's tough, man, because, you know, you play football on this grass all your life. And, you know, you never really realize how good the grass is for you until you hit that turf. You know, it's banging on your body, you know, cutting and running on your knees and stuff like that. It definitely ages you, but it's fun. It's exciting. You know, it's real crowd frenzy. Score a lot of points. I like to score touchdowns. And just give me opportunity to play football and get paid for it. You know, do something I love. Not a lot of people have jobs where they love it. So as long as I can do it and it still continue to be good to me, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability.
That's the voice of Houston Lillard, quarterback of the Tri-Cities Fever in the Indoor Football League here in Tri-Cities, Washington. Now, Houston, how tough was it for the Fever to get you to come back? As you mentioned, you took 2013 off after playing in the United Bowl for the Fever in July of 2012, which is the championship game for the IFL. And did owner Terry Carr, Coach Shaq, did they have to really prod you and push you to get you back on the field?
Well, it was tough because when I asked for my release before, my mind was pretty made up. You know, that was a tough decision for me. Alone itself right there. I played here for 3 years, never played nowhere else. So when I left, my mind was pretty much made up. But when, in 2013, things didn't work out how I planned on it. So I knew I had to play the next season. And 2014 came up, got an opportunity in Portland, and I believed in my ability. So I was like, it'll be great. You know, me and my brother playing the same arena. I know what I'm capable of doing. He's already, you know, exposing himself to the whole world. So it could have been a good thing with both of the Lillards in Portland and me being a quarterback and being a point guard, you know, two floor generals. So I was excited about that. That didn't work out, and I could not play. So with the fact that I had a newborn child out here in Tri-Cities, I have custody of my oldest son in Portland with me. It was a no-brainer for me to come back here because I can basically play ping pong and be back in Portland and the Tri-Cities to be with both my kids.
And, man, you've got this team balling. As you were saying, you know, things weren't good in the beginning here for the Fever. They won the very first game and then lost, I believe, 4 or 5 straight. And I believe that's when they reached out to you and said, help, you know, we need your assistance, your expertise, your precision passing. You were player of the week in the league for week 9, and you've almost got the team back to 500 and 2-game winning streak. So you're doing good things, and you're connecting with your good buddy who we had on last week or a couple weeks ago, Steve Whitehead. So I know you guys are happy to reunite.
It was tough when I got back. I definitely didn't realize the situation I was coming into, but I knew once I made the decision, it was what I wanted to do. So I just kind of got to know the guys and basically let them get to know exactly what type of person I was so we could play for each other and not for individuals. And once we started playing for each other and sacrificing our own personal wants or whatever for what was best for the team, we started doing better things. So, I'm happy we turned it around, man. Got Stephen Whitehead back. I was pushing for him, talking to Coach Shaq and stuff like that. So we got him back, and he's an easy target for me to throw to. Me and him kind of have a chemistry that I don't really have with no receivers I ever played with, solely off the fact that he was my trainer too. So kind of good with back and forth dialogue and getting to where we both know what we want to do. So right now, man, we're just trying to roll. I think we let one slip against Nebraska a couple weeks ago. So now we kind of waiting on other teams to lose to make the playoffs as well as we have to win out. But we prepare for it, man. We see the light at the end of the tunnel. Just trying to make it brighter every week.
Now, Houston, I believe that you guys will definitely do what it takes to get to the postseason. And, of course, you having the strong background coming from Oakland or San Lorenzo High School, you know, not everybody knows where you came from as far as your college background is concerned. And, of course, Laney College in Oakland, man. And I was just there this past weekend. Hey, there's a lot of nostalgia that comes out of Laney College and some great, great athletes such as yourself from that football program.
Yeah, when I was at Laney, I played for Coach John Beam. He's one of the OAL's all-time winningest coaches out of Skyline High School. Coach Beam is responsible for so many people being in the NFL right now. But at Laney, I played with Frank Summers. He was our running back. He plays for the Buffalo Bills right now. My freshman year, I actually went to Chabot College. One of my wide receivers was Steve Johnson. He's now the San Francisco 49ers. And, I mean, I developed out there. I was a basketball player all my life. I got to Laney College, and Coach Beam hooked me up with a guy named Roger Theater. He's a quarterback guru. And he taught me, you know, the ins and outs of being a quarterback and not just a guy who could throw the ball. And I had a good season there my sophomore year in junior college. Ended up transferring to Southeast Missouri State and Ohio Valley Conference in 1AA. Got out there, I was really banged up a lot of my career. Tore my ACL, broke my ribs. So I never really got to show exactly, you know, all my talents. And finally, I got out here where I stayed healthy long enough and got to be able to really show everybody what I could do. So it's kind of bittersweet, but, you know, God got me here, and I'm happy.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely continue to play on, man, and play strong. And you were mentioning a lot of the great football players that you played with in the Bay, and there seems to be a strong brotherhood, you know, with the players that come from the Bay. You guys keep in contact often and encourage each other and uplift and make sure that everybody takes care of each other?
Definitely. I think us as a whole, you know, with me, I play arena football, so I'm probably lower on the scale as far as professionalism or whatever you want to call it. But me, from Marshawn Lynch to Devon Best to Stevie Johnson to Frank Summers to my brother, Jared Cunningham, I mean, it's a lot of us. And we all are really from Oakland. We've known each other before we were anybody who was making money or playing, even in college. So we know that Oakland is not known for good things. You know, everybody talk about Oakland is for the murder rate, or it's for drug lords, or it's for pimping and pandering. We all stick together so we all can be a unit, a voice as a unit, to let everybody know, like, you know, Oakland got other stuff going on too. We got athletes, we got singers, you know, we got book writers, we got Lord Mayors, all of that stuff. You know, we got successful people that come out of Oakland too. So it's only right for us to stick together so our voice could be bigger instead of trying to be individuals and not represent where we come from as well.
Great words of wisdom there from Houston Lillard, quarterback for the Tri-Cities Fever in the Indoor Football League. And Houston, what would you say to kids in Oakland and the inner city or anywhere that, you know, maybe you're not heading down the right path and to get them right and let them know that there is a better way?
I mean, the biggest thing I can say is don't be a follower, you know. Try to do what's best for you. It's hard because, like, we develop habits from how we're raised. So if you don't get the love and the nourishment from, you know, the household, you search for it other places. So sometimes you end up following the wrong people. But just try to know right from wrong. You know, read, open the book. Don't always watch what's on TV. And just try not to be a follower. If you follow somebody, you know, who follows God. So they'll try to steer you in the best direction before somebody else. So just try to be your own person. That's the best thing I could tell you. You're going to go through obstacles, ups and downs, but just make your own best decisions for yourself instead of for, you know, other people or what the group thinks is best. Just try to steer yourself and don't be a follower.
And I assume that's what you and a few of your teammates tonight told the Boy Scouts at Kennewick, Washington. You guys made an appearance in the community and had some time with the kids tonight.
Yeah, we actually we came up here to talk to them about nutrition and fitness and stuff like that. And we just talked to them about just creating good habits. As a kid, you know, nobody wants to go to sleep early. Nobody want to eat the broccoli. They don't want to eat apples. You know, everybody want to eat candy and play the video game and stay up all night. But we just encourage them to get outside and be active, kind of like play 60 and eating, you know, vegetables and fruits and resting and challenging your body, you know, just setting goals. Go before you go to sleep every night, do 50 push-ups, 5 sets of 10, just setting goals. And once you start doing that to get easy, then you might have to add on 100. So do 10 sets of 10, just stuff like that, just about preparing yourself for life and setting good examples for yourself and creating good habits to where all the bad ones kind of fall by the wayside because they were non-existent from the jump.
Now, Houston, you're mentioning some things, you know, that are after my own heart. And, of course, health and nutrition is huge. And so, you know, what you're talking about is you're talking about building a solid regimen or, you know, or a progression on getting better. But what's your nutrition look like as far as, you know, your eating habits and how you prepare for your day in and day out endeavors?
Well, with me, I struggle, you know. I'm thicker, you know, I'm a stockier guy. So when I don't go work out or something, I gain weight and size. Most guys, they lose weight and get skinny. So I kind of, I've been fighting myself, you know, trying to stay away from red meats, burgers, fried food, stuff like that. Right now in my refrigerator, I got eggs and I got white egg whites. I got ground turkey, chicken, fish, and vegetables. But sometimes, you know, we travel on the road. I might mess around and eat some chicken strips. You know what I mean? But I mean, it's tough. Like, it's hard, man. So I just try to put as much good stuff around me. And if I make a mistake, you know, it'll be a mistake that I made because I wasn't prepared to not make that mistake. It won't be I'm sitting at home and I still go to Jack in the Box. Like, I have something to cook that's good for me. So that's it. And I just stay away from sweets. For the most part, you won't really catch me eating no ice cream or cookies or nothing like that.
Sounds like you might have that little Steve Whitehead sitting on your shoulder being your conscience and going shopping for you and helping you out.
Oh, man, he don't go shopping for me. He a busy dude, man. He got a lot going on, got his hands in a lot of pots, trying to change the community with these kids out here. But he definitely is a text message away from what you're doing. So I got people keeping me in the straight and narrow.
Well, Houston, since you've been back with the Fever, they have a 4-3 record, and as I said before, a 2-game winning streak. And like you mentioned earlier, you came into a kind of a rough situation, and man, you've got the team going the right way. You're doing good things. And this coming Saturday night in Kennewick, Salute to America night, half price tickets for all active and retired military against the Wyoming Cavalry. It's going to be a good one, Houston. Definitely go out there and get another W, and we will see you Saturday night.
I appreciate the call, and hopefully all the people who are listening, y'all come out and come show us some love and give us some support. We appreciate all those who do, and see y'all Saturday night.
Appreciate your honesty and your insight, Houston. Thanks so much for your time.
Good luck, Houston.
There goes Houston Lillard, quarterback of the Tri-Cities Fever in the Indoor Football League, an older brother to Damian Lillard of the Portland Trailblazers.
Man, always good to talk with these guys, and especially, you know, Houston's doing some things with the Boy Scouts and you know, just helping out, man. You know, taking a time out from his busy schedule. Got a game this weekend, a huge game, man, but giving back to the community.
Yeah, it's great to see how honest he is and open and willing to share that, you know, like when you asked him about nutrition, he said, I struggle. You know, he's no different than any of us. He's great at what he does at throwing the football and reading defenses and getting those touchdowns. But then he also still is like, maybe I should eat those vegetables, but that burger looks really good.
Man, hey, I don't blame him about the chicken strips. Man, hey, nothing beats a good chicken strip. And so, man, hopefully he continues to beat that battle, man, because it's important. It's important for our kids these days to understand you know, fitness and nutrition and what they're putting in their body, into their bodies, so that they can, you know, live longer, man. I truly believe that there's a correlation and a link to that. You don't want to clog your arteries with, you know, this crazy stuff. And so I think it's a great deal that Houston is doing. And you know, of course, he and his brother, you know, with my son, I think I'd mentioned that before, that, you know, when I took Devon to college and we were out there in Honolulu and Damian and Houston were there, and you know, Damian took the time out to actually talk to my son and give him a little couple of words of encouragement, and you know, I even took a picture with him. So, you know, great individuals coming from the East Bay, and I got to give a shout out to him.
Yeah, definitely. And you might remember at the last home game when I got a picture with Houston, I showed him the picture of Devon and his brother Damian together on the beach, and he thought that was pretty cool. And it was just so ironic that you guys were there at the same time in the same place.
Man, you know, enjoying the sunshine, no doubt. And you know, one of the other things that Houston was talking about is where he comes from, and that's why, you know, I was talking about, you know, his upbringing from high school to college, and you know how these guys support each other, even though they're playing in on different teams. You know, Oakland is it's a gem as far as, you know, understanding your background and understanding that it is a struggle, and just knowing that, you know, what the outside world thinks of their city. And you know, even though there are some troubling areas and troubling times, man, there is a lot of positives in Oakland. And that, you know, that upbringing rings out large, and which is a reason why, you know, when you look at the professional teams from Oakland, whether it's the Golden State Warriors or the Oakland Raiders or the Oakland A's, there is a strong contingency that spreads all around the country, if not the world, with an understanding that this is a city of true grit, and this is the reason why. These guys love where they come from.
And it's great that they stay in touch, and they will check in with each other once in a while, and they'll see each other at certain events, and maybe they'll plan to do charity events together and help the community and let people know you don't have to take the wrong turn and go down the wrong path.
You know, we're going to have to talk with Alicia and see if we can get Stevie Johnson. He's coming. Stevie Johnson's back in Northern California, and you know, signed a contract with the San Francisco 49ers. And man, Sean Wally, I know that, you know, the Seahawks are looking to reload and get back to the Super Bowl. When you look at that receiving core of the San Francisco 49ers, man, you're looking at Quan Bolden and Michael Crabtree, and now Stevie Johnson, man. You know, that's a nice little receiving core, not to mention, you know, having one of the best tight ends in Vernon Davis.
Hey, you can test the Legion of Boom all day. Let's go.
Just thought I would throw that one out there, man.
I got to say, as a Seahawk fan, I was not thrilled when they grabbed Stevie Johnson. But at the same time, we've got the Legion of Boom and then some ready to be up for the task. And hopefully they'll win more than they'll lose in defending those passes. But hey, you don't win them all. And, you know, law of averages, you're going to catch some of those balls, and some of them, hopefully, our guys knocked down.
Yeah, so, you know, look forward. And we've talked about this all through the show, looking forward to the NFL season and can't talk enough about it. And so, you know, I can't wait. You know, I think that the NFL got it right this year, pushing the draft back and, you know, it going right into rookie training camp. And then before you know it, the training camp's going to open, OTAs, and man, we're back in it and, you know, on the field and doing some great things with the NFL.
You know, they call baseball America's pastime, but it's definitely not the number one sport in the country, that's for sure.
Yeah. And so, Sean, you had a great weekend, man. You were up in the Palouse getting a chance to witness some great track and field at the Pac-12 championships, man. How'd that go?
Man, you know, it was great to work for the Pac-12 network again, and it was 3 days of long days of long, you know, TV work, as you know from working games yourself, Sean, that Friday was set day, which is setting everything up from the truck all the way out, from the cables to the cameras to anything and everything we need to get ready for 2 days of tape recording, because it was not live. I believe it'll air starting this weekend on the Pac-12 network, if you are so inclined to get that channel. I do not, so I'm, you know, SOL on that one. But yeah, the weather was good Friday and Saturday up in Pullman, and it was great to see so many athletes and their friends and family show up and support them and make the trip to Pullman. And it was good to get Washington State on the map and have them host a conference championship. And of course, once again, Tracktown USA, Tracktown Pizza, reigning supreme, the Oregon Ducks taking both the men's and the women's championships, the men for an unprecedented 8th straight time, the women not far behind them, 6 straight championships. Just amazing work being done in Eugene.
Man, you know, Uncle Phil never ceases to amaze, and it's not just in football. You know, track and field, track town, or Track City USA, as you were saying. I mean, you know, they really know how to show out. And of course, there's some personal ties for me, not only, you know, my son graduating from the University of Oregon. I've got a nephew there in Marcus Chambers. He's a freshman, one of the best 400-meter runners. Actually sprinters to come out of high school last year. And of course he was anchoring the 4x1, and you know, it just nothing short of brilliance when the University of Oregon steps onto the track.
Really? Really, Mr. Boyd? You didn't remind me of that when I was there and could have said hello to him and let him know how I'm connected.
Hey,
here.
You got a job to do. I was going to ask you, man, doesn't it seem like you're not doing enough? I mean, out of all the sports that, you know, that we do behind the scenes stuff, track and field has to be one where you feel like you're not doing enough because everybody's sprinting around and running. You're like, man, I got to keep up. But a lot of fun. I'm sure you had a lot of fun up there at the Pac-12s. And so hopefully I'll be getting a call here from CBS to do these the U.S. championships here in Sacramento in a month.
Well, what I found very interesting is I'd never been to an event like that. I've never watched an entire track meet. Sure, I've seen Olympics here and there, maybe some college meets on TV, but I didn't realize that everything is going on all over the track and the field at the same time.
Yeah, it's a 3-ring circus. So while you're watching, you know, sprints on the track, right across the way, you know, the hammer is being thrown, and then there's on the other side of the track, there's either the long jump, the triple jump, or the high jump. And, you know, it you have to find one vantage point so that you can get a chance to see everything. But, yeah, it is a grand spectacle. Everybody, you know, giving 110%, you know, whether it's upper body strength or you know, speed and agility. I mean, it brings the best out of you. And so track and field is one of the more fun sports if you get a chance to watch.
And it was amazing to see just how great those athletes are at whatever their event was, be it a relay, be it a long distance, hammer, discus, javelin, high jump, you name it. And there were NCAA records broken yesterday in Pullman. There were personal bests all over the map. There were great individuals on certain teams. And I think every team in the Pac-12 and outside of, and David Massey and Daniel Barkley, they're going to love this. Oregon State was the only team that didn't have a great showing, especially on the women's side. I believe the women had a total of two points, Sean Boyd. And I know you know more about the points and how that all works. But after all the events, two whole points. And, you know, in comparison, the Ducks of Oregon were in the 150s.
Yeah.
running away, no pun intended, with the championships on both sides. And, you know, there unfortunately a couple of injuries. And you know, that's going to happen. As you know, Sean, being a track athlete, and I tried to send you a few pictures and send you a couple of videos and figured that would be a little bit of a reminisce for you there, being the track athlete in your past, and fire up some memories. And it was a definite experience, and, you know, made some new contacts with Pac-12 and working with some new guys. And it was overall a long but good weekend.
Yeah, track and field is one of the great sports that is an individual sport disguised as a team sport. And so you know the outcome is that, you know, you do whatever you can in your individual sport and gather as many points as you can individually to win for the team. But you talk about true grit and effort. You know, these guys, you know, put it on the line, and the behind the scenes, you know, the preparation to, you know, to give that effort on meet day is outstanding. And so whether you're a sprinter that goes over and over on getting out of the blocks and getting out to that perfect start and understanding your drive phase and your kick phase, or whether you're a distance runner that's putting maybe somewhere between 60 to 100 miles a week, you know, of just mileage and drills. I mean, all of those things, you know, being said, you know, when it comes to meet day, you're putting your best effort forward, and there's nothing greater than seeing that athlete coming across the finish line, knowing that they left it all on the track. And, you know, it is. It's one of the better sports to see.
All right, Sean, two questions. Since you are the former track athlete, you will know what is going on. One question I had is, why are the coaches not allowed, at least somewhere on the infield? They were all kept outside on the fence, and they're having to yell and scream and shout at their athletes and tell them what they're doing wrong and help them out.
Yeah, well, because for one, it's an unfair advantage. So when you're dealing in a championship form, I don't know if you noticed the rail on the inside of the track. That is to help make, if there's a record being broken, that's to help the record be official. And so with that, as far as the coaches are concerned, if you have any type of an aid or an assistance, whether it's from, you know, some type of a whistle or some type of a clap or some screaming and hollering from a position, a particular point on the track, that's considered assistance. And so, you know, coaches are not allowed in the infield for that reason. Now, I think that's a great idea because, you know, for one, when I was a head track coach, you know, at the high school level, they allowed you on the infield until the championships. And so, you know, again, because it gives an unfair advantage, you know, to certain athletes. And so, yeah, they just want to keep it honest and keep it fair. And, you know, when you're factoring things like that, you know, coaches and then wind and, you know, making sure the track is fully regulated, you know, that's one of the things that have to be put into consideration.
My second question is, and maybe this was the same for you when you were an athlete and then also as a high school track coach, or maybe it was completely different. You'll have to tell me. But it seemed like there was a lot of love between the schools and between the athletes, what should be rivals, what should be, I hate you, I'm going to run until I'm blue in the face to not lose to you. Seemed like there was a lot of camaraderie and attaboys, which good sportsmanship is great, but it didn't appear to be a whole lot of, I don't know, one-upsmanship or you know.
Yeah.
Definitely no trash talking, not at all, which, you know, there's enough of that going around, but I found that very, very different.
No, it's very common because, you know, for one, we all know, like I had mentioned earlier, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that are put into the preparation. Now, that does not mean that, you know, each individual athlete does not want to crush the other. As a matter of fact, I mean, there are teammates that want to crush other teammates, you know, and so I think that, you know, there's a strong etiquette and a great sportsmanship that is brought into track and field. And there's no room for that. There's no room for, you know, all the trash talking. Of course, when you get to the, you know, the professional level where these guys, world-class level, when, you know, especially it's more so in sprinting that there's trash talking. But no, these guys love each other. They understand, you know, what it takes, you know, to actually, you know, get things going. And so, yeah, you won't see that. You won't. You'll see a lot of love and you know, because, again, you know, the preparation put into it.
Now, there's a name you may know that has been synonymous with Washington State track and field for the past 41 years. 20 of those years, the past 20 years, head coach of Washington State track and field, Rick Sloan. He is retiring, and this championships this past weekend was his final at Mewberry Track at Wazoo. Just an amazing amount of time he has given to the athletes, the student athletes, and the school.
Yeah, Coach Sloan has been there for quite some time. As a matter of fact, he was there when I was – he was one of the coaches recruiting me out of high school, Coach Sloan and Coach Chaplin at Washington State University. And so, you know, you talk about a historic coaching staff, you know, being developed. And so, you know, hats off to Coach Sloan. And, of course, there were a lot of alumni – I understand that we're there for the Pac-12 championships from Washington State University to pay their respects to Coach Sloan. And again, an excellent, excellent coach, and, you know, wish him the best in his future endeavors.
Absolutely. I believe there were about 250 alumni from the previous handful of years, and they were there not only for a reunion, but to bid a congratulations, a thank you to their former coach on a great career.
Yeah, so you can imagine Washington State, you know, they're a strong background of sprinters and distance runners. And, you know, that is just a testament to Coach Sloan and what he's done as far as, you know, developing these great individuals, these great athletes, these great pillars of society, you know, in this track and field program. And so, you know, we always talk about the University of Oregon and the foundation that they've set being Track City. But you have to tip your cap to what Washington State has done. The Cougs have done a great job, and Rick Sloan is definitely a part of that.
Now, I already mentioned how there was great camaraderie between the schools and the various student athletes and teams out there in Pullman. An amazing gesture by Robert Johnson, the Oregon Duck track and field coach. Once the men's and women's teams met, took their photos, had a great time together, celebrated their championship, he told each and every one of them to go over to Wazoo's Coach Sloan, interrupt an interview he was doing, and thank him and hug him and congratulate him on a great career.
Yeah, you know, Oregon, they only know how to do things first class, Sean Wally, and you know, that's just who they are. And, you know, that's why the greatest track meets, I believe, are in Eugene, Oregon. They have the best track, you know, and they have a strong image to uphold. I mean, you're talking about decades and decades of some of the best athletes. And, of course, in the beginning, it started out as, you know, a distance running mecca, you know, in the University of Oregon. And as a matter of fact, that's where the waffle racer shoe was invented by Bill Bowerman. And so, you know, of course, that lineage being handed on, you know, from coaching staff to coaching staff, you wouldn't expect any less from the Oregon Ducks as far as, you know, a classy send out. to Rick Sloan.
Yeah, it was a great gesture. It's been a great show here tonight. Big-time guest Gerard Rabb, Boise State wide receiver in 2005 and 2006. Of course, he was on the scoring end of a play that goes down in history, the hook and lateral in the bowl game against Oklahoma. And he played professionally in the AF2 with the Boise Burn. Check out gridirondreams.net to get involved with Gerard's summer kids camp, football camp in Boise. Sean Boyd, it was good talking to Gerard. And, of course, Houston Lillard, big-time guest number two, quarterback for the Indoor Football League's Tri-Cities Fever.
You know, Sean, it was great to, you know, to have two guests on and a little different feel for us, you know, going after the AF2. We talk NFL football and, of course, you know, not really getting a chance to talk about the preparation of playing arena football. And so it was good. It was definitely good to have Gerard on and Houston on and getting their perspectives on what it takes to get to the next level.
And they both had great ideas and thoughts on how to keep kids going in the right direction and what message to give them to get them staying on the up and up and going down the right path in life.
Yeah, you know, as you were mentioning, you know, Gerard has his the dream camp that is coming up. And of course, Houston doing some great things today with the Boy Scouts. You know, this wasn't staged. I mean, these guys, this is who they are. And so, you know, it's just great having these guys take the time out to come on the double with the Double S Express and, you know, share some of their thoughts and some of the things that help them.
Show 53's been a good one. 54 next Monday night. Definitely check us out on Twitter at Double S Express, XPRESS at Double S Express, and all of our shows on demand. So many places, hard to name them all. iTunes, Stitcher Radio, BBS Radio /DSX, and of course, double-s-express.com. Sean Boyd, it's been fun.
It has been fun, man. And, you know, for those that are listening to the show and taking a time out from NBA finals or NBA conference finals, I mean, man, this was a great show, and we appreciate you listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. As you were saying, Sean, show number 53 in the books. So that's going to wrap it up for On the Double with the Double S Express. It's been a great show, and for Don Newsom, our engineer, Alicia Flores, our producer, for Sean Wally, I'm Sean Boyd. Look forward to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.